We've got a round table coming up, and we're going to take the time to recover and examine some neglected Portland Black history. And we've got some pioneers from a movement that really was a game changer. It changed the trajectory of many residents in the Black community and brought about some social change and some economic changes too, and even in education. We'll be talking to that group momentarily, but we want you to sit back and relax and enjoy the program. And we want to thank KB for giving us the opportunity. This organization has been solid and consistent in providing voice for the unspoken, for the unserved and underserved communities here in Oregon. And we're glad that you're listening. If you're streaming at www.kboo.fm, or if you're listening at the local frequency at 90.7, and to our listeners in Philomath at 104.3 and Hood River 91.9. You're tuned to The Motif, Reimagine, a jazz sensibility. A part of Portland history that's been neglected, at least in, from my standpoint and point of view, stewards of Portland Black history continues to neglect or to leave out this very significant chunk of the history. And so we decided that we are going to call it up and call it out. And here's how we're going to call it out. We're going to call it out because we've got people here who were part of a movement that really epitomized what was needed in terms of self-consciousness, self-determination, economic development, solidarity, unity, and mental health. It was the Nation of Islam, and it was founded back in the 30s by Master Farad Muhammad, who had traveled from the Middle East. He met a man, a sharecropper, by the name of Elijah Poole. And Elijah Poole then took the teachings and developed what we call today the Nation of Islam. Now, we also must recall that during that time, there were movements, intellectual movements going on to try and do the very thing that the Nation of Islam had a great measure of success doing, that is to raise the consciousness of the so-called American Negro. The Harlem Renaissance was an enclave of writers responding to the social needs and challenges of the so-called Negro during that time. And as we advance to the 50s and early 60s, there was another movement that came up called the Black Arts Movement or the Black Aesthetic Movement. Once again, we have figures and names that were writing, that were acting, doing screenplays to make a determination about what can we do to contribute to the raising consciousness of this group that has been neglected. Consequently, the Civil Rights Movement accomplished what none of the movements accomplished, which was a constitutional amendment. And so here we are today looking back and saying, well, we need to raise that history up, reevaluate it, and value it for what it did to this segment of the population. And so today, my guests are here, and these individuals were part of that movement, and they did a magnificent job in their own respective journey. I also wanted to mention that at the very same moment, there were teaching centers that were called mosques that were spread across the United States, which were like beehives where meetings would take place, and people would read materials that were sent to talk about economic development, to talk about self-determination, to talk about self-esteem that the group lacked for so long. And remember, we're talking about descendants of enslaved people who were neglected, especially after Reconstruction. And so with the advancement of these teachings, it was just such a powerful, powerful moment in the history of American blacks, and certainly here in Portland. And so we've got some of the pioneers here to talk to us about how that experience impacted their lives. Gentlemen, assalamu alaikum.
Okay.
Let's start. Okay, so Omar, I hear you. So please give our audience your introduction.
Yes, my name is Omar Shabazz. I have been in this community since 1972, and it's been a journey, and this is a journey. In fact, from my point of view, the movement of the Nation of Islam was an empowerment movement to bring us back into a consciousness that we can do for self.
I want you to move your mic a little closer. Let's go around to Brother Mukadeen. He can do some introduction.
Yes.
I'm Abdul Hassan L. I'm so glad to be here amongst the brother and the sister.
Glad to have you.
I'm just glad to be here. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you. Next.
I'm Shakur Shabazz, and I'm very grateful today for the invitation to be able to speak on the behalf of myself, my family, and community. And so I'm humbled at this mic.
We are humbled that you took the time to spend with us. Next.
My name is Mariah A. Taylor.
We know who you are.
Oh, well, they introduced themselves. I'm sorry. I thought I was supposed to. I'm following the kings in here. You don't know what an honor this is. And I've been in Vanport since 1947, December 26th. I'm from a family of 25. We're the Allen family.
We are so happy that you.
And I'm here speaking on behalf of my brothers, three brothers.
Thank you very much. And last but not least, and here with me.
My name is Nia Shafsuddin, and I'm really happy to be here, and I thank you all for giving me the blessing to be among my brothers and my sister.
We are pleased to have you here in the studio, too. So we've got some people on the phone. Why don't we have Mr. Bruce Broussard?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. Well, we're thankful that you're taking time out of your day to spend with us, too.
A legend.
Thank you very, very much. I'm Bruce Broussard. It's such a pleasure being with such a group, if you will. As you know, I was in the recruiting business, Marine Corps, when I came here in 1968, right after Pitt.
Yes.
And probably the first person I met was Mariah because she had me on her board.
Okay. Well, listen, so thank you. Thank you. So now we got the introductions done, and we worked out some of the kinks in the volumes and the headsets. So now we've got some fluidity, we can go ahead and proceed with the program. And I think the best way to start is for each individual to talk about their exposure and experience with the teachings of the Nation of Islam and how that impacted their life. I think, and because we have limitations of time, if we didn't have limitations in time, we could go into a larger part in a larger context. But because we do, we want to be as brief as possible so that everybody can have equal time. Why don't we start with you, Brother Omar? Tell us about your experience with the teachings and how it shaped your evolution as a person.
Well, I think, seriously, my first impression of the Nation of Islam was, you know, negative, because at the time, the African-American was more consumed with his rights and those civil disabilities that resulted in the Black Panthers and some of these other offspring groups who were all beginning to stand in conjunction with the stand that the Nation of Islam had taken. My real introduction to the Nation of Islam was when I met Muhammad Ali as a student at the University of Oregon, and he was anti-war. And so the university invited him down to speak against the war in Vietnam. And because I was a militant and militant-minded, and the students all knew, when Muhammad Ali requested a bodyguard, everybody turned right to me and said, "You're the guy." I said, "Okay, well, I'll take this opportunity." And it was a wonderful experience. People who were in the teaching profession at that time, the professors who knew Muhammad Ali, of course, they came down to meet him personally.
Yes.
And I met a professor, Muhammad Aminu, and his wife Amina, and the discussion of me bringing them to Portland, and the trip here, and then the trip back, and the discussion as to proper Islam. We had a wonderful discussion, and it it hyped me for learning about what is this Islam that I'm not getting. But I was really caught up in that Panther, you know, type movement, because that suited me just out of Vietnam. And meeting Muhammad Ali changed my idea about the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his what his movement was really trying to do. And I've been on this path since, and I'm really grateful and I'm thankful, because the paths and the people and the personalities and everything else that we really began to understand how we all have come to grow from this experience of slavery, and how our intellect has now is just, it's like a bright light, you know, it's a bright light. And I'm just thankful that I'm part of that light.
Thank you,
brother. In the rise of African Americans.
Thank you, Brother Omar. Brother Mukhtar?
My journey has been one of travel. I mean, since I've been introduced to the Nation of Islam by Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad, I did a lot of research, and I got a chance to even meet Master Farad and travel with him to Pakistan. And when I'm coming back, I was introduced to the Moors, and that experience just took me to a whole new world.
Yes.
Wherein we have hooked up and changed, might as well say, what was commonly known as Oregon, it is now will be known, as far as the UN is concerned, New Mecca. So we are actually promoting and trying to get our people independent of the subjective, treatment. You have no excuses no more. We the Moors are removing it all.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Mukhtar. Brother Shakur.
Yes. I began my Islamic journey in Portland in about 1969. I began processing in the Nation of Islam, and I can remember going to high school before I had entered into Islam. I was one that didn't want to go to class and didn't want education. And so Islam at that time helped me to gather my senses and attend school, which I graduated from Adams High School in Portland.
Yes.
And I can remember it was quite a few Muslims at that particular school. I used to go down the hall with Muhammad Speaks newspapers with a bow tie on. And the principal would get on us about, you know, you can't sell those papers in the hallways. And, you know, we were a little rebellious at that time, and as well as young.
Brother, you were more than a little rebellious.
But, you know, it turned out that I straightened, Muhammad straightened me out a little bit. And so the principals all were relieved that I was one that did a 180 degree turn for the better. And throughout my journey thus far, I've had my struggles and ups and downs, but it's one thing that I have always been able to lean on is the truth that I understand. If I'm down in the hole, I have a rope that I can pull myself up. And so that's what I say about Islam, is a ladder, they say, to heaven. Well, Islam is that ladder.
Thank you, brother. We got a couple of people on the phone. I want to go to the phones before we go to Madam Mariah Taylor. So we've got two people on the phone. We've got Brother James 4X, and we've got the Imam Mikhail Shabazz. Assalamu alaikum.
Flying fly. Who am I speaking to?
Oh, that's 4X.
This is brother Eugene.
That's 4X. Oh, assalamu alaikum, brother Eugene.
Assalam. We're here with the panel, and we're asking for each person to talk about their experience with the Nation of Islam teachings and how it evolved them in their growth and development. Now I'm putting that question to you.
Okay. Yes, my name is Brother James H. Rashid, better known as James Foex.
That's how we know you too.
James Foe.
Yeah, Brother James Foex. Yeah, that was back in 1971, what I feel was my first contact, conscious contact with God.
Yes.
Because for that, I had just been, you know, moving around and did a lot of stuff I shouldn't have done in life, but I just didn't know. And I had lived in, I was raised in Oakland, California, and I also lived in Seattle. So when I came to Portland, I was just all beat up and tired, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
come on.
And I feel that that's my Mecca. That was where I first had conscious contact with God, because before that time, I didn't believe in anything but just, you know, money, you know, drugs, you know, and just all the things that I shouldn't have believed in. But when I came to Portland, I went to cut it short, I actually went to a meeting on Fremont.
Yes.
And there's one person, I don't know if you've talked to him or not, is Brother Omar Shabazz.
He's with us.
Alhamdulillah.
Hey, brother.
We met him. Hey, brother, good to hear your voice. And I'm glad you brothers called me. But this brother, I knew him before the Nation of Islam, and just so happened they were having an event where a minister was coming from Los Angeles, and I was outside my apartment on 19th and Alberta, and the brother came by with Muhammad Spooks, and I had on house shoes, a robe, and a headscarf on my head, tied up like dude.
Yes.
But the thing is that he's the one that talked me into coming to the Nation of Islam. And I love him to this day. And we are still great friends after 50 years.
Yes. Well, listen,
and
we are.
It was only because of the Nation of Islam. Because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, may Allah be pleased with him,
brother,
taught us how to really love each other.
We certainly love each other,
to
too.
Be proud of who we were, and to actually love one another.
Yes, yes.
And the thing is that we still, after 50 years later,
yes,
we still love each other.
That's yes, good. We Listen, we've you got know? One other person on the phone before we get to our two women in the studio. We have the email, Mikhail Shabazz. Assalamu alaikum.
Brother Shabazz.
So, Imam Mikhail Shabazz, what we're asking the panelists if they can tell us their first exposure with the teachings and how it helped them in their growth and development.
Okay. Well, actually, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, with Allah's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. My actual first exposure to the community of al-Islam in America was in Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. I worked as a young man. You know, I was an active. I was kind of active in the streets in Chicago. I had very good parents and a very hard head. So that means that I was out and about. But the Nation was always present in Chicago. In fact, most of us, or I'll just speak for myself, had somewhat of a fear. It was respect, but it was a fear of the Nation of Islam because it was so different. The community was so different and so serious. I had the opportunity to work at the Salam restaurant.
Yes.
Not as a Muslim, but as one that they call lost sound, who they were trying to give opportunity to.
Yes.
So Brother Benjamin there, who was the head chef, gave me an opportunity to work there. And I worked there for a while. And there were things that I was doing that I won't mention on the phone that Brother Benjamin let me know that even that had to go or I had to go. And so
we can attest to your street life now, brother.
I took off. I left out of respect. But Brother Benjamin was a father figure-like individual. So he wasn't cruel, because he was just firm. Mm-hmm. And that stayed with me. And after I left, I actually ended up going all the way to Vietnam, and I ended up coming out to Portland, Oregon.
You sure did. I remember when you got here.
Yes, I came here because my grandmother was here, but and my big brother Omar Shabazz, who's sitting in the studio right now.
Yeah, he's sitting there. He can't contain himself, but he's sitting there.
Yeah. So I came to Portland looking for a change in life. Because I was very good at being bad, and I wanted to change my life, because I had a child at that time. She's fearing that if I had not left Chicago, that I had two choices: death or penitentiary, because of how good I was at being bad. And so, after leaving and coming to Portland, fast forward. Staying with my brother, Omar, and he's already in the Nation of Islam, and him and his wife, Sandra, welcomed me into the home, and invited me to come out to a meeting. Now, I was already familiar with the Nation in a different way.
Yes.
But not this way.
Yes.
As being my big brother, you know, and a role model that I always looked up to, it was easy for me to go in with him, as easier than going in cold turkey on my own.
Yes.
And I walked into the mosque, the temple at that time, sat down, and Brother Thomas Williams, Tawheed Sadr Din, was giving one of his fiery rhetorical speeches, and it struck my soul. I realized that it wasn't the Blackstone Rangers that I was looking for, that was a gang. It wasn't the U.S. Army that I was looking for, which I joined and went to Vietnam, another gang.
Yes.
But was this collaboration, this is what I was looking for.
Yes.
Structure, brotherhood, and something that I could believe in. He delivered the message. I listened one time and never turned back.
Brother,
turned back. It was what I was looking for in my soul.
Brother Imam.
The beginning of the growth of my soul.
Yes, sir.
And so I came in, and as you all know, we were the young brothers.
Yep, we were.
Among the brothers, some of the other brothers, you know, they were more avant-garde and ahead of us, but we were rolled into this brotherhood, and it was mostly familyhood, and we had a doctrine that we could believe in, and I just bought into it lock, stock, and barrel. Moving forward, my life changed. I never had any desire to go backwards whatsoever. Didn't have too much desire to even talk about it or expose it, because it just wouldn't do any good. But my history coming up as a black man in Chicago, Vietnam, etc., then into the Nation of Islam, allowed me and afforded me the opportunity to work well with individuals in the prison and individuals on the street who were either on their way to prison or coming out of prison, because I that rapport was couched in the disciplines, the teachings, the visions, the moral consciousness of the Nation of Islam and on evolutionary into orthodoxy. And here I am today. And I don't deny, and nor am I ashamed of my history.
Yes.
As a Muslim, I'm very proud of having been blessed by Allah to come into Islam in that way.
Yes.
In that way. Because the fire started years ago. When I first came to Portland, the fire started in my belly.
Yes.
And that fire is still boiling to this very day.
And we,
so that is it in a nutshell.
We really appreciate you taking time out, and that fire clearly hasn't been extinguished with our panels. We've got two more intros. I want to start here in the studio here with Sister Nia. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Share with us your exposure with the teachings and how you evolved.
All praise is due to Allah. I was first introduced to the Nature of Islam in 1968 by my husband, Kenneth Allen Nomo. I started going to the mosque on 7th and Fremont, and I started listening to the messenger, Elijah Muhammad. And it was something that I never heard before, him bringing black people together, you know, all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I never heard anything like that, and it excited me. And I introduced my brother, my little brother, Frank and Eugene Kelsaw. At the time, my brother was going down the wrong path.
I wasn't going down the wrong path.
But when he heard the message from Elijah Muhammad, it changed his life.
Never look back.
And thank mine. You. Thank you for introducing me and my younger deceased brother, Frankie, may he rest in peace, to the teachings. We really appreciate and love you for that. Last but not least, Madam Mariah Taylor.
Yes, sir.
And your siblings, Brother Charles, Brother Lewis, Brother Khalid, Brother Steve, and Brother Isaka, Brother Isaac, were fundamentally important in the formation of the Nation of Islam in this community, too. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that was like to have those three brothers working to help to evolve this teaching here in the city, in this area?
I wished I could, because I was not involved in a relationship where what they chose to, the path they chose to follow was discussed. Personally, I cannot. I wish that they were here so that they could allude to that. I know that my brother Charles in Denver, Colorado, even though he followed the path in terms of being a Muslim, he and I were very, very close.
Yes.
Because it's not about religion, it's about relationship.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we had a very warm and beautiful relationship. Isaka, he changed, it was Isaac. Our relationship in terms of the path that he chose to follow in terms of worship or honor or whatever, has not been discussed. And Steve, which was Kali,
yes,
changed his name. He's a twin brother to Steve and Cleve,
mm-hmm,
twins in my family. I can't speak to him. Unfortunately, he's gone on, and that we didn't have that kind of family relationship where we discuss our religious differences or our spiritual or our faith differences. But I know the three of them were involved.
Yes, definitely.
And I also know about Isaka was in with the Black Panthers, mm-hmm, which were given a pretty negative image and bad rap. And they had a clinic, next door to my clinic at 5311 North Vancouver Avenue. They had a breakfast program.
Wow,
where
yes,
children were given breakfast and they were honored. And I really believe that it's about time that the stigma of Black Panthers as being violent and the negative image needs to be changed to a positive one.
Yes.
Definitely so.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to put, with the time we have, and I think we have some adequate time where everybody can respond, I want to go to a higher level of detail and talk about diet. Because there is a book that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad put out called How to Eat to Live. And from that book, people followed it like it was the Bible, eating one meal a day, eating nutritious food like bean pie. It is nutritious.
They used because to sell them.
That little navy bean, bean soup. The sisters would bake the bread, go to Cornell's and buy that wheat flour, whole wheat flour, buy the brown sugar. So now I'm trying to ask a question, if all of you can respond to the question. Nutrition is a big part of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, food is medicine. But today's population and black people are at a higher risk for some of the maladies that we suffer from. What would you say is a way in which you were able to preserve your health following the dietary rules of the Nation of Islam?
I'd like to respond to that. My diet is intact. Firstly, back when I said that I was in high school at John Adams, part of the dietary program of the Muslims was to abstain from eating pork. And it was at that time that I left pork alone. And that's been a blessing for me. And from that point of non-eating pork, I went to cancel out the red meats. I went to the birds and left them alone. And I left the fish alone. So I would say that I'm partially vegetarian, partially vegan, but I ascribe to being halal and kosher at this point. But it's, and so my, and so there's something that I can sustain myself with. I try to teach my family better eating habits. I encourage everyone to try to eat the best of foods that we can to prolong our life.
If I might add about that diet, and I certainly agree, and it's a balanced idea of your health, your well-being, and even how you look. You look healthy when you feel healthy, and you are healthy as a result of the way that you eat, you know, and you get the rest and all of these other things. That information about the diet, when you get into your older age,
yes,
and you're not having trouble with your knees, you know, trouble with your feet from the diet and the food things. Maybe there was a time in this country when people were really concerned about the quality of food,
yeah,
that we eat. That has been brought in question now, and so there's, yes, there hasn't been any better advice than how to eat to live.
Yes.
True.
I was talking to Brother Mukhadin, and he shared with me some remarkable information about his own personal diet, and we were talking about some of the migraine headaches that I have, and he asked me about diet, and he asked me about frequency of eating. Brother Mukhadin, can you share with the listeners your courageous, disciplined dietary rules that you follow?
Absolutely. It happened, I think, in the early days. I was known for going without eating food for long periods of time. But what I started to do when I was like about 70 is I said, I'm going to treat myself every birthday. I'm going to add a day, because the Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that you can live longer and you'll feel better if you put some space between the meals. So every birthday I say, until I get to that 9 that he was talking about, I'm going to go 9 days without eating. Now, mind you, I don't eat any solid food, but I might drink some hot chocolate or something, you know, in that period of time. But what I'm trying to say is that, yes, I am in paradise at this point in time, and this is great, and hopefully I can stay out of the fire that the Quran is telling us about.
Wow. Anybody else want to talk about their dietary practices?
Yes, sir, if I might.
Please, nurse you practitioner.
You and I were a member of ACHIEVE, which we looked at.
Yes.
Access to Affordable Healthy Foods. That's where the market started in the New Columbia. Access to exercise in places where the people worship, go to school, work, and play, such as bicycling, walking instead of the bus.
Yes.
Several, the impact of that have been at least two incidents that I can recite. Number one, the churches that were using fat burners are now baking food rather than frying it. You also had someone come to the Alan Freeman apartment and teach a class in healthy nutrition, particularly from people that were of the South that believe that your your greens, mustard, turnip, collards, whatever, poke salad, had to be doing the fat back had to be doing the backstroke in it in order to be favored. Well, they were taught in this class how you can use the smoked tokyo parts rather than that. And myself personally, I have lost 54 pounds because I was trying to, not because I was low energy. I'm on the go 6 days a week under the bridges, 6 days a week. I'm in the pool 22 hours every week. And that's where the weight loss came in, because I take water aerobics in 12 feet of water 6 days a week. And I eat one meal a day. My mother from the South took a class, in a culinary arts class, and graduated from PCC, was a cook at PSU. She cooked by, she balanced our meal by color. If you had greens, you had to have sliced tomatoes or corn or baked chicken or whatever. You would never have spaghetti, macaroni and cheese, rice, and all of those. That's overkill of carbohydrates. But I might add, it is the sedentary lifestyle of sitting that's killing us.
Yes.
It's sedentary lifestyle, not being healthy. I just had my physical at 85 years of age, and I am exceptionally healthy. But because I take care of myself,
yes,
and I'm there to help, encourage, and take care of others, and teach them the right path in terms of getting off their bones and getting in the water and doing something for their health, rather than sitting at home and having a pity party about their aches. And there are people in that pool have fibromyalgia. They have everything from their head to their foot wrong with them. But they're in that water taking care of themselves. And it's free if you live in North Portland or if you're on Medicare. So there's no excuse. If they can't walk, there's a lift to lower them in the pool, a lift to take them out. Staying healthy and fit and active is what it's about. Balancing the meal and making sure, if you're going to eat one meal a day, I have days I don't eat because I fast and pray for a certain thing that's coming up, a person having surgery, whatever. Keep your mind renewed, your spirit, your heart, and know that you are not a victim. You are a victor. If you take care of yourself,
thank you.
At any age,
we got some folks on the phone. Brother James Forrest, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Will you please talk to us about what dietary restrictions you observe? We got about 2 minutes for you.
Oh,
say again, sir.
Please take 2 minutes and tell us about your dietary observations to try and maintain optimal health. How do you eat?
I think the ironic part of this, which he just was helping me mentally and spiritually, because I just got diagnosed with about 6 weeks ago, and I am learning and experiencing how things I should have done and things that I'm doing now,
yes,
as far as my health. And as far as my eating, but I don't know, it's kind of hard for me to say, I guess, things about my health because I have just got diagnosed with cancer.
I understand.
So what I'm basically doing now is just doing what the doctor tells me to do and try to eat properly, you know, eat less sweet food. But I think the thing is that I think the biggest thing that I've held on to is that I haven't eaten any pork in the last 60 years,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's been, you know, driving amazing. But as far as things that I do, as far as my health now, it's just, you know, less sweet, more greenery, and more spirituality.
Yes, Brother James, I want to take, before we go to the email, Mikhail Shabazz, I want to, we do have a new practitioner on the line with us, so I want to, perhaps she has some caveats, some supportive advice she might want to give you in terms of diet.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right.
And I'm alluding to what question or comment?
Brother James has stage 4 cancer.
if you eat a sugar-free, it turns to sugar. Your body interprets that as sugar regardless. There's no such thing as sugar-free. Okay. You might as well be eating sugar because your body will treat it the same way. It's how you choose to balance your meal. Again, as I said, my mother balanced hers by color. She was a better cook because she was from the South than when she took the culinary arts. But it's a matter of you researching in terms of what is, I'll just put it this way, the ground is impoverished if you try to grow your food. They have additives, MSG, they have all kinds of genetically altered foods. You can't afford to be vegetarian, you can't afford to be meatitarian. I know that's not the correct term. But the point I'm trying to make is you have to do what's best for you. Be sure, and my sister, Naima, before she passed, had suggested starting, the Muslims starting their own farm out in Soviet Island to grow healthy and affordable foods. That has not materialized, but that's what she envisioned, so that we can have our own resource for staying fit and healthy in terms of proper nutrition. That has not happened, but that's what she had proposed. Now, there's no, with the cost, I'm not going to get into where we are today, because we already know what the, I know that the Super Bowl party, there won't be any deviled eggs, I can tell you that.
Thank you.
Truth of it is almost unaffordable. It's going to encourage other people to start shoplifting more, which is what has closed many of our stores. It's a shoplifting. Right. Walmart closed for that reason and other reasons.
Right.
We need to look within ourselves and our community and come up with a pragmatic or a today's solution, because our children will be suffering from, like, they won't have the school lunches, though they did have it. Education's being cut out. Those children who were in special classes for school, they won't have that. No access to food. Can't afford to eat them. So what are we to do? We need to come up with our own solution as a community.
Thank you very much.
How we're going to survive this day.
Brother James, I hope that helps. I want to...
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so listen, we are the time is evaporating very quickly. I want to give the email, Mikhail Shabazz, a couple of minutes to talk about his dietary practices and how it helps in a positive way with his health.
Well, I appreciate it. I would like to take this moment to tie it back to the history of the Nation of Islam, our Islamic growth in America, etc. Many people have made many choices in terms of coming from the Nation of Islam and moving on into Orthodoxy or etc. But one thing that is profound is the fact that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad inculcated a diet and dietary restrictions into the religion as it was forming, so that it became a part of faith to eat a proper diet. It was part of our faith. It was part of our belief system. It wasn't necessarily a casual choice. And we find that in as Muslims, Orthodox Muslims, we have in the Quran the dietary restrictions we will go into, and the dietary allowances. So we all know, we've always taught, and coming up as Muslims in America, you know, you are what you eat, think, and drink. Islamically speaking, moving forward, evolving into a different aspect of the language, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that we should not fill up our stomach. We shouldn't overeat. Ramadan represents the cleansing process of not overeating, oversleeping, or overdrinking. And in Islam, the practice is, whether we do it or not, one-third water, one-third air, and one-third empty stomach. So you have, food, water, and empty stomach. So you don't fill up all seven of the intestines. You leave some room for digestion, and you don't eat as often. Fasting is something that is common among Muslims, to fast throughout the year, not just Ramadan, but in other parts of the year, particularly Monday and Thursday. And that fasting, scientifically, has been proven to be of great benefit to any human being who participates in it. And the last thing I want to say, going back to the Nation of Islam, and how to eat to live, many of the practices and laws that were given to us in the Nation of Islam
were replicated, duplicated, and profited from by others. Yes. Who took those ideas and concepts and made a fortune, yes, selling them as dietary, this and that and the other. So it's always been a part of our religion, as it has always been a part of religion, for people to watch their diet and to eat in a balanced way. And as Allah says, eat of the good things that are of the earth. And now, as Sister Mariah pointed out, it's getting a little bit hard to find.
Thank you. Thank you. We are up against it. Brother Omar, 1 minute.
1 minute. I just want to refer to the growing of our own food.
Yes.
The food bank has an excellent garden space, and no one utilizes it.
They're not
and from
using
our,
it.
And then they don't utilize it. Yeah. And from our community, in my opinion, if there was something that we wanted to organize, we would organize those immigrants, I'll call them immigrants, who your Somalians and Ethiopians who grow their food at home, if they knew about that location, just so that we could start a group. Go out to the farm, plant, you get your own individual plots and everything. Grow our particular foods, but we have to be thinking like this. We're looking someplace else, but the solution is right there and it's not utilized. And the food bank would love to have that garden filled. They have the places where you can clean the food, clean your plants, everything to provide for yourself, but we don't utilize it.
I wish they would.
Yes. You understand what I'm talking about.
On Wednesday, they give me food that's totally nutritionally unsound to take to the homeless and those on the streets and under the bridges.
The opportunities
spaghetti,
are there.
Rice.
Yes. Okay, listen. I knew we would be up against it, but I think we've had a rich and lively discussion. So we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. What I'd like to do is have each of you to give some exit comments, and please keep it as brief as you can. Why don't we start with you, Sister Nia? Sister Mariah, go ahead.
I'm going to defer mine to someone else because I'm not a woman of a few words.
No, you're not. Shakur, go ahead.
Yes. I'd like to include this part of my journey.
Yeah.
And I want to take you back to 1973 in Chicago.
You got a minute. Go ahead.
It was at the Richard L. Jones Armory that I had the chance to see the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for the first time. And from that moment on, I fell in love with that person and what he was doing and what he has done. And so I'm not afraid to say that my love for him has carried on in others. You know, I didn't love myself at one time, but by learning to love through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the brotherhood and sisterhood that was afforded to us,
yes,
I'm able to reach at and keep that spirit today. So I thank all that were involved in the nation back of yesterday, of today, and hopefully of tomorrow.
Brother, we appreciate your depth of thought. Brother Mukadeen?
Yes. I would leave off letting everybody know how important it is for us to develop our minds. And that's basically it, and how I do it is I just make it a point. We eat every day, but spiritually we don't really do a whole lot of eating spiritual food. And the best source is the Quran. And so I wash with it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all.
Brother Omar?
I think, in my opinion, the real key to success is being able to use all of these tools that we have gained along this path. And if we realize that Islam has been a path that has been both opportunity, you know, for opportunity, it has been a path for our intellectual development, but it should also be a path that reminds us of our sensitivity of those youth that are coming behind us, especially right now, that we need to give them something solid, firm, and then we need to be role models so that they can follow the path that we set. And we have to set honorable paths with honorable knowledge and with it confirmed truth, and then move forward and be gardens and good shepherds over what we're producing.
Brother Imam Shabazz, can you take a minute, please?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I will repeat what I've heard said of the African Proverbs. The leader succeeds when the leader after him succeeds. And I would say that if we want to look at the history of Islam and its growth and development, its potential and its value, we should look at the works of one, Imam Waqif Muhammad, yes, of two, Minister Louis Farrakhan, because those are the two branches that have grown out of this tree.
Thank you, Brother Imam. Brother James, wow. Brother James.
Yes, sir.
We love you, brother. Take a minute and give us some exit thoughts. Take a minute and give us some exit thoughts.
I just wanted to say that this is the most important medicine that I've gotten since I've gotten my diagnosis. And just talking to the Brotherhood, and talking to some of the brothers that I haven't talked to in a long time, I'm so grateful to all you guys.
Yes.
You know, for Carl Love, I'm grateful to Brother Eugene for hooking me up. But I'm grateful to every brother that is here now, and the brothers that I told you with back in the 70s.
Yes, sir.
I've got tears in my eyes. Now,
Well, guess what? We're going to talk again until we just did. We're up against it, and we're going to come back at some point in the future, God's willing.
Okay.
And
let me know.
We'll do a depth of thought and a different kind of cultural excavation. I want to thank all the panelists for taking time out of their Saturday to contribute to this roundtable during the month of February. I want to thank this organization, KBOO, for giving us the time to do this kind of cultural excavation. I want to thank Danielle for holding everything up. Thank you, Danielle. And brothers, sisters, we will be back in this chair another time in the very near future to do more of this kind of cultural excavation. Thank you. KBOO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. Stay tuned.